Good evening, and welcome to a one-night stand with the big bands, tonight featuring Andy Kirk and his Clouds of Joy. During much of the swing era, the combination of Andy Kirk, Mary Lou Williams, and the Clouds of Joy drew foot-stomping cheers all the way from Harlem jive spots like the Apollo Theater and the Savoy Ballroom to the polka-patterned Lawrence Welk circuit. Thus was written in the book on the big bands covering the year 1939 and part of 1940. Good evening, this is Arnold Dane and a one-night stand with the big bands featuring Andy Kirk will be brought to you by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks, where you'll see the all-new, completely restyled Monte Carlos for 1973, and by WTIC. The appropriate opener is called Wednesday Night Hop, recorded by Andy Kirk and the Clouds of Joy. In 1936, John Hammond wrote in Downbeat magazine, "Kirk's music has that unique Kansas City simplicity and style which make it such a relief from the Eastern bands like Calloway, the Blue Rhythm, etc., etc., all of whom try too hard for the audience's comfort." We've met and interviewed Andy Kirk, and I think you'll enjoy the conversation that ensued. I think you'll enjoy the music, too, and let's begin it with In the Groove. Andy Kirk and the Clouds of Joy, recorded February 15th of 1937, a song written by Mary Lou Williams and featuring her piano artistry, and also the tenor saxophone of Dick Wilson. Monte Carlo for 1973. Just hearing the name creates a vision of elegance in your mind. Why not make this your year to step up to the beauty and convenience of this personal luxury car from Chevrolet? The Monte Carlo is all new this year, and Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks will be proud to show it to you. See the new body design, the new front bumper design, and the completely restyled interior. Take a test drive and relax in the quiet comfort of a Chevrolet ride. The Monte Carlo has improved handling, so you'll find it a true pleasure to operate. Let Russo's experienced salesmen show you their excellent selection of Monte Carlos for 73, the luxury car without the luxury price tag. At Russo's, they're available for immediate delivery, so be sure to see them soon. And while you're there, take a look at all the other new Chevrolets in stock. That's Russo Chevrolet, just minutes from Hartford. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Let me quote first, Andy, from something that was written by a fellow I know that you've known over the years, George T. Simon, who says he's a gentleman, a kind man, a happy man, an intelligent man, and a talented man. Andy Kirk, who led one of the better swing bands, one that at times threatened to achieve greatness, but which never quite reached the pinnacle it seemed to be constantly approaching. Perhaps Andy was too lenient. Perhaps had he driven his men harder, they might have played better more often. But such an approach might also have destroyed the warm and relaxed rhythmic feeling that pervaded so much of the band's music. Gee, those are pretty kind words from a fellow who knows the big bands very well.
That's right. Well, George is pretty right there. But as far as driving, that wasn't a part of my personality, to drive anyone. However, I always had a wonderful understanding with my men because I always told them in advance what I expected, not because I expected it, but because it would help them, too. It was a business thing, and if we did all right in the business, well, they would profit the same as I did.
If you were all successful together, then that would be the formula.
That was the point.
I must start by saying that Andrew Dewey Kirk was born May 28th of 1898, and I cannot believe that the man seated across from you is 74 years old.
I am.
God bless you.
Thank you.
Is that what clean living does for you, Andy?
Well, I don't know whether I brag about how clean I've lived, but I try to live clean.
I guess there's some dispute about where you were born. I think both Kentucky and Ohio are trying to claim you. Was it Newport, Kentucky, or was it across the river in Cincinnati?
Well, my mother's sister, who I came up under, my mother died when I was four. My mother's sister said I was born in Kentucky, but my father said I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, and he pointed out a house. But I stuck with my mother, and I said, okay, if she's happy with being born, so it doesn't matter. It's only a mile away.
But it was in Denver that where you were raised by your aunt, as you were mentioning, that you learned to read music and sang in a choir, and you had your first experience in the musical field.
That's right, in Denver.
How old were you when you first started to play a musical instrument?
22 years old.
22?
Yeah.
That's kind of a late start.
That's a late start, but I liked music, and I understood music, and I could read music, and so it was just a matter of picking up a horn.
What horn did you pick up?
First horn was a tenor saxophone. Want me to tell you the story about
it? I'd love to hear it, yes.
I was working in Sterling, Colorado at the time, in a barbershop, Shining Shoes. They had a city band, that is, a town band there, and the barber on the ninth chair was a bass player. So I was looking through his magazine one time, one rainy day, and I was asking him about different instruments. And he says, you know what you should do? If you're interested in a musical instrument, I'd advise you to buy a saxophone. That's a new instrument. So the agent for Lion Healy was a drugstore, Seymour's Drugstore. So I went over and they had a tenor there, a brass tenor I bought for $75, a brand new one for $75. And so
that's still the going price, isn't it?
Yeah. So I became interested in it. I bought a book from them and learned the fingering. But I decided that this is what I wanted.
We'll jump ahead in the story a little bit, Andy. I know that you quit, moved back to Denver, and became a letter carrier and studied with Sunday afternoon lessons under a former solo clarinetist with the Boston Symphony, one Franz Rath. But let's move ahead to the mid-30s and one of those marvelous recordings that you made that was really a showcase for some of your sections in the band, a number called Walkin' and Swingin'. Can you tell us something about it?
Well, Mary Lou could tell you about that because that was her idea. And anything that she brought in, well, we would go over it, you know. She was always writing. So she wrote this tune and made the arrangement, and we played it, and we liked it. So that's about all I can say.
That was recorded in March of 1936, Walkin' and Swingin' with Andy Kirk and his Clouds of Joy. I think you'll agree it's an extremely listenable band. Let's get back to your early career once more, if we can, Andy. And I know that you played with a number of lodge bands, but what was the first really organized musical group that you played with?
The first orchestra I worked with was George Morrison's orchestra in Denver. That is an organized mm-hmm. orchestra. But I know I did a few little things, but I remember playing at a place called Weir Hall when I bought my saxophone, and I didn't know much about it, but the manager of the hall came by my house, and he introduced himself, and he says, "You're Andrew Kirk?" I said, "Yes." He says, "I understand you own a saxophone." I said, "Yeah, I own one, yes." He says, "How would you like to play in our hall?" I said, "Well, I don't think I'm qualified to play a saxophone." He says, "Well, the people want to see it because this is a new instrument, you know." So on that, he paid me $4 a night to sit up so they could see my saxophone.
Cy Oliver was telling me his father was a music salesman, and he said he used to play the saxophone, and he'd march down the street in a marching band, and there would be a group of people following him just to see what a saxophone looked and sounded like. So true. George Morrison, from what I've heard, was an absolutely brilliant musician.
He's very fine. He still is.
Is that a fact?
Yeah. Oh, boy, he can still play beautifully.
He plays violin, right?
Yeah, violin.
Uh-huh.
So I mentioned to George, I said, your tone is still wonderful, especially down in, on the G string, down in the lower register. He says, well, yes, he says, I better stay down there, too, because because of his hearing. And now he's kind of lost his hearing. And the overtones kind of get mixed up. So. Morrison had what we call a society orchestra. He would use a big orchestra at the big affairs, you know, like at the country club. But he also had other little club affairs, you know, and he would divide the orchestra up. Lunsford might take four pieces, and I might take four pieces, and he himself would be at another place, and then he would come around to all see how we were doing, you know, make an appearance, you know.
Tell us about some of the other members of that George Morrison band. I know there were a couple of famous people.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Lunsford was one. He was playing alto there. And there was another a very fine musician. Many people haven't heard of him, but because he quit playing in bands and taught, and Charlie Parker was one of his students in Kansas City. So he's a very fine musician. He's retired now.
Uh-huh.
Leo Davis is his name.
Leo Davis. Mm-hmm. Well, if he taught the bird, he's really something.
That's right.
There was somebody else in the band I didn't realize had ever been a blues singer, Hattie McDaniel.
Oh, mercy. Did I forget Hattie? How could I? Yeah, Hattie sang with us and traveled with us, especially at one trip we took to the coast. That was a Pantages thing. We had 26 weeks on a Pantages time.
Hattie McDaniel, of course, is the same Hattie McDaniel who in 1939, or I guess 1940, she was named an Academy Award winner for the part of Scarlett O'Hara's Mammy in Gone with the Wind,
that's right,
which
that's
was a 1939 right. film. By about the mid-20s, the band took that tour of the West, the Pantages tour that you were mentioning a while ago. And it was at that time, too, that you got married, right?
Well, I got married just prior to that. That was in 24, I think.
1924.
Yeah.
Mary Colston, I think,
yeah,
is her
Mary
name.
Colston, yeah.
And you're still married?
Yeah.
That's how many years now?
47, almost 48 years.
Isn't that marvelous? At that point, you figured that you were doing well enough with the music so you could drop the post office and maybe make music a full-time career.
That's right.
Andy, anyone who talks about Kansas City and the big band era has to talk about the one they refer to as the Kansas City Anthem, the Moton Swing. The Andy Kirk arrangement, was that one of yours?
No. Eddie Durham. You know the story on that?
Give it to us.
Eddie Durham was arranging for the Moton Band. And you remember You're Driving Me Crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he made an arrangement on You're Driving Me Crazy, but the melody wasn't there. And it ended up to be Moton Swing. Thank you.
That was also recorded in March of 1936 by Andy Kirk and the Clouds of Joy, Moton Swing. Solos by John Harrington on clarinet, Ted Donnelly on trombone, Harrington again, Dick Wilson on tenor sax, and Paul King on trumpet. King, incidentally, was a local Kansas City boy and a swinger, according to Andy Kirk. And we'll continue our conversation with Andy shortly. If you're thinking about buying a used car, now is the time to do something about it. Russo Chevrolet in Windsor Locks has the reliable second car you've been looking for. When you buy a Russo late model used car, you're buying a car that has been completely reconditioned, a car you can rely on. You'll be amazed at the selection of low mileage late model cars available. Russo Chevrolet, known for used cars you can trust. That's because skilled mechanics work with the very latest equipment to give you a car that's a blessing, not a headache. So stop in soon and get a clean, smooth running used car in the best possible condition at Russo Chevrolet. Experienced salesmen will help you find the used car that's right for you. Russo wants you to be satisfied because they know happy customers will keep coming back. Russo Chevrolet, just minutes from Hartford. Take the Bradley exit off I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. You're listening to A One-Night Stand with the Big Bands featuring Andy Kirk and his Clouds of Joy and being brought to you by Russo Chevrolet across from Bradley International Airport in Windsor Locks, where you'll find dependable used cars and, of course, the beautiful new Chevrolets for 1973, and by WTIC in Hartford, Connecticut at 1080 on your radio dial. This is Arnold Dane, and let's continue with our conversation with Andy Kirk now. And Andy, now a married man, you quit both the George Morrison Band and the United States Post Office, convinced that you could make it in music full-time. And as I understand it, you freelanced around Denver for a while and then joined a band that was anything but a society outfit, the T for Terrence Holder Band in Dallas, Texas.
Terrence Holder played trumpet in the Alfonso Trent Orchestra. And they split up some way or another, and he formed his own orchestra, and I was one of his first members. Incidentally, Holder finally left that orchestra, and I took over that organized orchestra, and that became, it was already the Clouds of Joy, but then it became Andy Kirk and his Clouds of Joy.
Yes, and incidentally, I might say that as I have read this, Holder had some personal problems which kept him away from the band, right. And you didn't want to take over the band. You wanted it left just as it was, but they sort of insisted on it.
Well, he did leave, and when he left, I took over the band. Then we started on our own. We were pretty successful.
I think so. Yeah. Andy Kirk and his Clouds of Joy were thus born. And I've read, too, Andy, that you always kept trying to retreat back to the sax section, just sitting in with them and letting one of the vocalists lead the band.
Yeah.
And your manager had to come to you finally and say, come on, we're selling Andy Kirk. You have to stand up in front.
That was exactly what happened. But a musician likes to play, you know.
Did pick up some new sidemen. You said alto saxophonist John Williams, and of course that had to be the biggest musical bargain ever because you got Mary Lou in the bargain.
Right, and that was by accident. You know the story.
Tell us the story. She was only 18 or so at the time,
she was,
I understand.
18, 17 or 18,
yes.
18, 17 and 18. Jack Capp and a group who had the Vocalion and the Brunswick label. Were looking for talent. So they came to Kansas City and they recorded my band, Georgie Lee, Blue Devils from Oklahoma City, and Chicks Goggins, a bunch of bands, you know. We made it an audition first before the recording, and my piano player didn't show up. Jackson didn't show up, so John says, well, look, we used to call Mary Lou Prelude. So he said, I call Prelude, and she'll sit in. So he called her, and she came down. She made quite an impression. And a few months later, we went to Chicago to continue with the contract, you know, and we didn't have Prelude with us. And so the Jack Capp says, what's going on here? Where's the girl? You know? So we had, finally she came in the band.
You also used to call Mary Lou the Pest, right?
Yeah,
the guys
yeah.
in the band did.
Yeah.
Because she was always begging for a chance to play, and everybody was saying, come on, it's an all-male orchestra.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about her. I understand she has perfect pitch. She's a brilliant musician.
I used to say, if you dropped a dishpan on the floor, she'd tell you what key it was.
I guess this led to one of the most successful stands in a long time. You played Kansas City for a long, long time with this band. It's something like 7 years?
Yes. Let's see, 29 through about 35.
Isn't that? And this was during the teeth of the Depression, but Kansas City didn't feel the Depression too badly, they tell me.
No.
It was under Tom Pendergast's control, and there were plenty of nightclubs. There was a great deal of nightlife, a great deal of activity, and musicians all seemed to have plenty of work. Did you work in any of the gangster-owned places, Andy?
Well, everybody here.
You don't have to mention any names.
I did. I worked in two nightclubs that were run by gangsters. Hmm.
I was going to say it's kind of a challenge to be working for.
Yeah, the only opposition they gave us, we used to have a softball team, and we would brag about who we beat today. We belonged to City League, incidentally, you know. So we'd brag about who we beat today. So one of the managers said, well, you guys always talking about how good you are. He says, I'm going to see how good you are. So he organized a bunch of waiters, and himself, he decided he was going to pitch. So we scheduled a game, and Kansas City was a nightlife town, you know, and so everything lasted all night. So the ball game started at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the girls would come with their gowns, their long uniforms, and Big Jim, we called him Big Jim. I won't call his last name. He'd pitch. Well, when we got through with him, it was all made something like 33 runs or something. So when we went in, he shook our hands and said, you're the best. Keep on bragging.
What was the biggest record hit you ever had, Andy?
Sales-wise, or I think Until the Real Thing Comes Along was the biggest hit because it introduced the band to many people.
As a matter of fact, I read something about that. I kind of figured that might be the one. See, it's right up at the top of the sheet here, Until the Real Thing Comes Along, that you were so surprised that after that you found tremendous interest, great enthusiasm among people that you didn't expect had ever been exposed to your music before.
That's right, because we had always played the blues type, the stomp, what we called in the early 30s. There were stomps we were playing. However, we played, as I told you, ballads and everything, but if we were playing for a dance where we wanted everybody to be sent, we'd be playing jazz, you know. But this, Until the Real Thing Comes Along, was in our library. Anybody could have had it because it was written by three kids who with ukuleles. And I don't think any of them got any credit for it, but I was the one who introduced it to the public, you know, through records. And they didn't want, that is, the Decca didn't want us even to do that. They did us, gave us a compromise. It was, Bob, what was that? I said, Christopher Columbus. Had to be done on this recording for political reasons, I guess. And so they asked us to do this. In the meantime, I had spoken to Jack Capp about this ballad. And just to quote him, he says, now look, what's the matter with you? You're like all the rest of these colored bands. Anytime you got something going, you want to do what the white bands are doing. I said, it's not a matter of putting color into music. It is putting color into music, but beautiful color, musical color. And it's a different, these are the things that we do every day in the ballrooms, and I don't see why you would object to it. He said, well, we'll think about it. In the meantime, let's do this Christopher Columbus. So we did that because that was Fletcher Henderson's theme song, and the publisher already had him set up on his label, and now they wanted us to do it on the Decca label. Mm-hmm. So we did it, and after Jack Capp said, "Oh, that's a beautiful thing. You did a wonderful job." He gave me a couple of pats on the shoulder and said, "Thank you, boys," and so forth. And I caught him by his coattail, and I said, "You said you were going to listen to this ballad." He said, "Okay," and he looked at his watch, and we did the ballad. All right, now, I don't know whether he knew that it was what it was going to be, but we did it. It did it as a compromise. So when it came out, it was a big hit. Now, I like jazz, so the next time we went into the studio, we wanted to play some jazz, you know. He says, "Oh, now, wait a minute, Poor Butterfly." Now they put us on the Sweet Kick completely, you know.
I see.
So that's how it happened.
Andy, let's listen to it now. I'm sure it'll bring back some pleasant memories for a great many people. The Andy Kirk Clouds of Joy, and Until the Real Thing Comes Along.
I would work for you, I'd slave for you, I'd be a beggar or a knave for you. If that ain't love, it'll have to do. Until the real thing comes along, I'd gladly move the earth for you, to prove my love, dear, and its worth for you. If that ain't love, it'll have to do. Until the real thing comes along, with all the words, dear, at my command, I just can't make you understand. I'll always love you, darling, come what may. My heart is yours, what more can I say? I'd beg for you, I'd lie for you, I'd draw the stars down from the sky for you. If that ain't love, it'll have to do. Until the real thing comes along. Just can't make you understand. I'll always love you, darling, come what may. My heart is yours, what more can I say? I would rob, steal, beg, borrow, and I'd lie for you. I'd draw the stars down from the sky for you. If that ain't love, it'll have to. Until the real thing comes along.
How would you describe your band at that time, the mid-1930s? Would you consider it a hot band or a smooth band, or did you try to be a little bit of each?
We tried to be a little bit of each because it was a matter of finance, you know. We couldn't stick to any particular style because we didn't have enough people who wanted this particular style or that particular style, so we had to play everything. So we would play the colored dances, and they'd play what they wanted. And then we used to play a ballroom chain called the Archer Chain, and they had ballrooms up in North Dakota, and They didn't want any blues. They want something else, you know.
Yes.
But we had to play the polkas. We had to play waltzes. We had to play everything. You know?
You had to be a pretty well-rounded band.
That's right.
Mary Lou Williams recalls life with the Clouds of Joy and swinging Kansas City, Missouri. She says, my, what a band it was. It was a happy band, a good-looking band, an educated band. We had love for each other. I was never allowed to go around by myself. My husband or two or three of the boys were always with me. I was well sheltered. We had a hard time at first. We were stranded all over, in Buffalo and Chicago and Cincinnati and Greeley, Colorado. When Kirk came backstage after a job with his head down, we'd know we hadn't been paid. And one of the trumpet players would take out his horn and play the worried blues, and we'd all laugh again.
That's a new one.
It tells it as it is. Tells it the way it was.
Part of that, I think he was speaking of a period around 1933, prior to 35, because 35, we... 36 we moved to New York. Mm-hmm. We had no problems before that. But when she speaks of Greeley, Colorado, sometimes we would take a trip out of Kansas City, and of course Denver's my home, I want to go out to Denver. And they were having a little tougher out there than around Kansas City, mm-hmm. So we'd head back to Kansas City. And there were some times where there wasn't much to pay off, but those were on tours.
Uh-huh.
But any time we were in Kansas City, we were working, brother. I mean, really working.
One other thing that Mary Lou said in some of the remarks that we've seen written by her, she said, if things were bad, I'd go in and play Froggy Bottom and everybody'd be happy again.
Yeah.
That, what's there about that particular bit of music that would get people going?
Well, it was the beat, you know. Bum-bum-ba-doo-bee. Bum-ba-dee-bee, bum-ba-bum-ba-dee-bee, you know, and so it was a little hop business, you know. It was rhythmic, and so they'd dance, you know.
How long had you been arranging, Andy? When did you start?
Oh, I started in Denver. I started with a teacher in theory and harmony, a fellow by the name of Walter Light. And Mary Lou had the ear, and she'd ask me things, and I would diagram something for her, you know, and see. But before long, she had it and gone, you know, so I didn't have to tell her anything. However, we did pick up some things. She, at first, she had a problem in voicing. You know, she might give something to a trombone that really belonged to a clarinet, you know, something like that. She didn't have any formal training in it, but she just had an excellent ear.
Well, a few years after that, Andy, I guess it was about 1940, after 13 years with the band, Mary Lou quit. Yeah. And I have read that there was, well, there were some problems which were figured to be insurmountable. Is it anything you'd want to talk about?
No, because I had no problem with her. There was no problem between Mary Lou and me.
In 1948, after what was described as a financially disastrous tour, it was pretty much the end of the big band era. Matter of fact, many of the big bands had thrown in the towel about 2 years before that, and you had tried to keep it going, but you realized at that point, Andy, that it just wasn't going to be the same anymore.
Right. By the time we got back to New York, I was about $3,000 in the hole because of transportation. You know? So that was...
handwriting on the wall.
That was handwriting.
But while many other musicians tried to keep going with music, you did. You do Moonlight a bit even now, I understand. But you went into a number of other business ventures.
Yeah.
We understand that you've sold some real estate.
Right. We opened a flower shop first. And then I worked in... well, I was still playing the club dates with my book, you know. Mm-hmm. And I picked up some New York musicians who could play.
You managed the Hotel Teresa, too.
Yeah, I managed the Hotel
which
Teresa.
Which is Harlem's largest hotel.
That's right. That was because of my real estate experience.
And I understand that you are a well-respected member of the Jehovah's Witnesses, and you're also working for the American Federation of Musicians, Local 802 in New York, which keeps you in touch with everybody, doesn't
right,
it?
Right, right.
It's almost theme time, Andy, and we'll be back to visit with Andy Kirk once more and hear the Andy Kirk Clouds of Joy in just a moment. Monte Carlo for 1973. Just hearing the name creates a vision of elegance in your mind. Why not make this your year to step up to the beauty and convenience of this personal luxury car from Chevrolet? The Monte Carlo is all new this year, and Russo Chevrolet and Windsor Locks will be proud to show it to you. See the new body design, the new front bumper design, and the completely restyled interior. Take a test drive and relax in the quiet comfort of a Chevrolet ride. The Monte Carlo has improved handling, so you'll find it a true pleasure to operate. Let Russo's experienced salesmen show you their excellent selection of Monte Carlos for 1973, the luxury car without the luxury price tag. At Russo's, they're available for immediate delivery, so be sure to see them soon. And while you're there, take a look at all the other new Chevrolets in stock. That's Russo Chevrolet, just minutes from Hartford. Take the Bradley exit from I-91, then the first exit to Russo Chevrolet, directly across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks. Do you have any regrets? You look back over a career, my goodness, that's done so much for you, and a career for which you have done so much. Is there anything you would have changed about it if you had the opportunity to go back again?
I can't think of a thing that I would have changed. I accepted everything that came my way, And I don't remember the bad things. I remember the good things. We had so many good things happen.
I must quote from George T. Simon again, his concluding paragraph when he talks about you. When big bands started to fade from the scene, Andy went with them. But unlike many other leaders, he found various things to do. He became eminently successful while still remaining the same gentle and kind man whom we all admired so much. Who said nice guys finish last? I imagine you're kind of pleased to read things like that.
Yes, that's nice.
Andy, it's absolute delight to finally meet you after listening to and enjoying your Clouds of Joy for all these years.
Pleasure's mine.
Our sincerest thanks to a marvelous gentleman, Andy Kirk, for being our guest tonight on A One-Night Stand. We'll be back at 9:05 on December 13th, and our musical guest will be Cy Oliver to talk over those great years with Jimmy Lunsford and Tommy Dorsey, and I guarantee a swinging session, so join our special guest, Cy Oliver, on December 13th. Tonight's One-Night Stand was produced and edited by Brian Hartnett, engineering by Mike Russell and Bob Schirago. And it was brought to you by WTIC and by Russo Chevrolet, across from Bradley International in Windsor Locks, where you'll find dependable used cars and, of course, the beautiful new Chevrolets for 1973. This is Arnold Dane.